Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Swing and a drive, right center field. This one is falling. It's a base hit. It'll go up the alley. Rutland will score. Ruiz around third. He is being waved home. The Phillies have won the ball game. Ruiz slides. Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over as the Phillies strike again with two outs in the ninth inning, and they have a 3-1 lead.
Yeah, now we can start a Phillies-Dodgers series. We needed to hear that first. Welcome back. It is the Midday Show, broadcasting at Stateside Live for 94 WIP's Red October Rally. Tomorrow, the first 2015 guest here will enjoy a free Stateside vodka cocktail starting at 2 p.m. in honor of Stateside being founded right here in Philly in 2015. Come on down now. Have some lunch. Hang out. It's a special day, hopefully a special October to come. Joining us right now, as he does every Friday, is the voice of the Phillies. You heard him right there in that call back in 09, Scott Fransky. Scott! How you doing?
Boys, how we doing?
We're pretty good, man. We're excited about some playoff baseball.
Yeah, why not? Let's do it.
Scott, this is it's special every time this year, but do you get extra butterflies when October rolls around? Like that, when you crack the mic tomorrow night, does it feel different? Or have you been in so many of these that it's playoffs?
No, it'll feel different. I hope I never take for granted what it means to be here and to be in those moments and to have those games to call. I hope I never take that for granted because it's something different. It's, you know, when I got here, 07 to 11, you know, five of my first 6 years we were in the postseason and had a lot of meaningful games, had a lot of big moments. And I knew then that there was nothing more fun than doing playoff baseball to be able to call that. So, yeah, I hope I never lose that.
You know, Scott, when we talk about this team, we know it's different, but we're trying to put our finger on the pulse of this. You're closer to it than we are. What do you see that's the biggest difference with this team this year as opposed to any other season they were in this position?
Well, I think certainly it's different from last year. I think the way they played in September has guys feeling differently, their confidence level is different. It's different for everybody, each player individually, but, you know, you take somebody like Alec Bohm, who, you know, went into the postseason last year and wasn't swinging the bat very well and ended up not in the lineup, you know, was you know, out of the lineup for those games in New York, and you know, he's a different player right now. He's riding high. He's got, you know, high level of confidence. He's swinging the bat well. So I do think that there's a lot of those type individual players that probably feel a lot better about themselves than where they did at this time last year. So, yeah, I think the attitude is good. I think the overall confidence level is pretty good.
I think the resiliency, too, of this group, it's been there all year. I mean, for a team that won as many games as they did, Scott, they had some down moments. I mean, they got swept multiple times, right? Out of New York twice, out of Pittsburgh, and I came on here the next day. I was like, this is rock bottom. We're screwed. And look at them now. But they, every time they had one of those, they bounced back in a big way. And even you could throw the Zach Wheeler injury in, which was enormous in so many ways. But they seemed to, every time there was a moment where you question, is this going to teeter the wrong way, they got right back up. And that gives me confidence because last year against the Mets, I feel like they didn't do that, right? They went down, lost game three, and then game four, game was on the ropes, and it just went the wrong way. I feel like they have a resiliency to them that maybe hasn't been there maybe since 22.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I mean, part of what helped them bounce back so often was having such a great starting rotation. And that meant that losing streaks were short. There are always going to be losing streaks, but you hope that your starting pitcher will keep them to a minimum. And for the Phillies this year, for sure, they had such a good starting rotation that those losing streaks never became, you know, 4, 5, 6 game skids. They would kind of cap it at, you know, 2, 3, 4 maybe, and then bounce back.
All right, Scott, let's talk about the matchup that starts tomorrow night because it is not your typical first round series. It's not a typical division series. For my money, it's the two best teams in baseball. I think the winner of this is very likely to win the World Series if they get through the series. You just saw this team a few weeks ago when the Phillies were out in L.A. How great are the Dodgers? Are they very good? Are they great? Like, when you watch them, and I know it was only three games, but just in, when you saw them a few weeks ago, how good is this team coming in here to face us?
This is the best team they will play. I don't know how many more teams they're going to play, but this is the best one they're going to play. And that doesn't mean they're going to go all the way, even if they win this series. But I do think they're as deep and as talented, and they're playing well right now. They probably feel really good about the way they played in that series against Cincinnati. They're not without flaws. Every team has flaws, but this is a really, really good baseball team the Phillies are going to have to try to beat.
There's no question. They come in here as defending World Series champions with Ohtani on the mound. Let's talk about Game 1 tomorrow night. Christopher Sanchez, he answered the bell. I mean, I remember we talked to you, and we were down in spring training for a few days, and everyone we talked to said, this is real. Like, the Christopher Sanchez breakout season is coming. And I always think, Scott, in sports, when people say that, it never tends to live up quite to the hype. He did. I mean, he was exactly what people said he would be. He's going to finish probably top two in the Cy Young behind Skeens. But tomorrow night and this series, this is a different kind of animal now. Like, he's the number one. And if you think about this series, potentially 45 innings, he could take down 14. I mean, he could be almost a third of the innings the Phillies throw could be Sanchez in his two starts. You think he's ready for this moment?
I do. I think he's very much ready for it. I think the fact that, you know, it's 6 weeks now they've been without Zach Wheeler. It's 6 weeks that he's had to wrap his head around that notion that he's going to be the game one starter. I think everybody saw that coming, as long as they didn't need to use him on a, you know, final day clinch kind of thing. He was going to be the game one starter, and he hasn't backtracked at all. I think he'll be good. I think he'll be ready for it. I think he is everything you want to see in an ace. He's got three pitches. They're all quality pitches. He commands all of them very, very well. He's got one of them that's just a devastating pitch in his changeup. And, and I like the fact that he's left-handed to go up against the guys like Ohtani and Freeman. Yeah, I think he'll be ready for it. I hope he gets enough. You know, I mean, Zach Wheeler last year came out of the gates firing and seven scoreless innings, and they're up 1-0, but one wasn't enough. And there will be times when that starter leaves the game. There's no question. I think they will ride their starters as much as they can, and I think the Dodgers are going to do the same thing. So it could come down, you know. The idea is if you're Philly or you're LA, I think the idea is you're going to try to stay in the fight, stay in the game, keep it close, even if your starter isn't pitch perfect, so you have a chance against the other squad's bullpen.
You know, speaking of when you said being pitch perfect, you know, there's been a lot of conversation about Aaron Nola and the fact that he might potentially start one of these games in this series.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
How are you feeling about that? You know, I know his ERA wasn't what you wanted it to be this year, and it hasn't been indicative of who he's been in the past. But how do you feel about that if he gets potentially a start in this series?
Well, I mean, again, I don't know what they're going to do. I know that's, you know, kicked around the idea of him starting, and maybe he's got a short leash, and you have one of the other guys there to piggyback with him for instance. But again, you know, Aaron Nola's got a pedigree. He's got some track record. He's had some really good games. He's had some that aren't as good in the postseason. And I know it would be if they do start him, it's going to be a huge topic of conversation.
Oh, yeah. You know we're going to talk about
that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And however it works, it's going to be a huge topic of conversation for a long time, I think.
Yeah. The other day when and Topper's going to speak at 1:15 today, so we'll see what he says or if he says anything. But when he was on the morning show on WIP the other day, he kind of alluded to it might be. And if they do that, I'm wondering, does that mean whoever is his piggyback could pitch tomorrow out of the bullpen? Like, I'm wondering what you – because you only need three starters in this series, right? With the days off. You don't need a fourth starter. So if they use Aaron Nola, that other starter, which I guess could be Ranger Suarez if they're penciling Luzardo in, he could be used in a different way. Because game three isn't until Wednesday night, right? You have the day off tomorrow, or excuse me, day off Sunday, and then day off Tuesday for the travel day. Do you think they could do that? Like, if they pencil Nola in as the starter for game three, potentially Ranger out of the bullpen tomorrow?
Potentially. I think, the way I understand it, Jesus went to him at one point and said, look, if I'm not starting game, till game three, I'm happy to come out of the bullpen. He's done it before. And I think the thing you get with Jesus is you get a left-hander who is dominant against lefties. Yeah. Ranger is more an even split kind of guy. But I do think Lizardo gives you the option of, let's say you start Nola in game two. Let's say you go that route. And your plan is to have Lizardo piggyback with him. Dodgers load up on left-handed bats in their starting lineup. And maybe Nola goes one time through the order. Maybe he goes a time and a half. Maybe he gets into the fourth or fifth, and then you flip the script and you go to Lizardo. And if you did that, if he pitched on Monday, he could still come back and potentially be available, certainly for game five, to close it out back here on the following Saturday. So there's a lot of things that they're kicking around. I do think that if you start Nola, it will be a situation where he's watched really closely. And if there's any signs, of the stuff not being there or the command not being there, then I think you would end up with a quick hook.
Scott Fransky with us here. It is our Red October Rally at Stateside Live. Come on by. Lot S is where you can park and walk over. It's an exciting day here through 6 p.m. today. Afternoon show after us. John Middleton's going to be live at 3 o'clock today. So come on by as we get ready for tomorrow, which should be an awesome atmosphere at Citizens Bank Park. All right, Scott, let's talk about Bryce Harper. You've called the moments. There's been a lot of them. He has been one of the great October performers ever, certainly of this generation. I don't think he had a great year. I thought it was good. And by his standards, not great, because his standards are so high. He's a future Hall of Famer. What do you expect? Because I think he's going to have a big October. I always think he's going to have a big October, especially, 22, his first October here. He went into that postseason not hitting well. All right, he didn't hit well in September. He had a lot of injuries that year, and then it was like a switch flipped, right? That home run he hit off of Michaelis in St. Louis. Your expectation for Bryce this October?
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable expectation to think that he can have a big October. I think whether it's Trey or Kyle or Bryce, I think you're talking about players that can get so hot that they carry a team through a series, through a week, through a couple of weeks, whatever the case might be. Is it a must? Somebody needs to step up. Right. Somebody's going to have to swing the bat. Somebody's going to have to come through in big moments, two outs, runners in scoring position, that kind of thing, come up with big base hits. And I think, he's as good a candidate as anybody, given the track record, to be that guy. And I'm with you. I mean, his year, and he would probably tell you the same, he wanted probably more out of his year from, an offensive standpoint and personal numbers. But he understands the long game. He understands what's ahead of him. And, a little bit like the way Mookie Betts, I don't know how much of that Dodgers series you watch, but, Betts had a really bad year. But he finished strong. And he had a huge first round. And that's all any player can do. What has happened has already happened. And they can't dwell on that. And as an athlete, they've only got their next at-bat and their next chance in the field and what's still to come, the next game on the schedule. So you can put all of, you start over. You're 0-0. And you can, pen the narrative however you'd like based on what happens over the next few weeks.
Speaking of Betts, Ohtani, a couple nights ago,
see what you did there.
Yeah, that's
when when Betts got a big hit, he talked after the game about he wouldn't be surprised if teams pitched around Shohei. He wouldn't pitch to Shohei. How do you think the Phillies are going to approach that? Because typically, when there's a player as good as Shohei Ohtani, you try not to pitch to him in a big moment. They have Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman behind him. As dangerous as it is, Scott, I couldn't just put free base runners on for that Dodgers lineup.
That don't seem smart.
I don't think they are. Based on what I've seen from Rob Thompson over the years, and even seeing the way they have managed games against Ohtani and the Dodgers, their preference has been generally to go after him. And you do it You do it with the right pitchers.
Right. Like a Matt Strom has had a lot of success.
Absolutely. And you've got, you know, a bunch of left-handers you're going to be rolling out there at some in some form or fashion, be it as a starter or a reliever. And I think you try to gain that whatever that matchup advantage is. It's still going to come down to execution. I mean, if you watch that game the other night, any of those games the other night, the Reds are leaving pitches in the middle of the plate. And, you know, the Phillies have places they feel like they can go to get Ohtani out. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be in the middle of the plate, no. Generally. So that, in that regard, it comes down to execution. So is Matt Strom, for instance, executing his pitches the way he wants to? Can he get in above his hands and above the barrel and get the swing and miss that he's looking for? So I think you still stay with that idea that, you know, if you have the right matchup, you're going to go after him. You're going to try to get him out because I think, by and large, they've done a pretty good job of that.
They have. Scott Fransky with us here. Red October Rally as we get set for tomorrow night. Game 1, 6:38, and then 6:08 on Monday night for game number 2. Scott, as much as it's always about the players, managers play a big role in October. They make a lot of decisions, and moments happen, and they affect the moments. One thing when I was watching the games the last few days is some of these managers are very aggressive with using their best reliever in the biggest moments, right? Yeah. The Phillies have done that in the past, but they haven't had a closer quite like Duran to just kind of leave the ninth inning to. Do you think they would use Duran in an earlier part of the game, or is it he's the ninth inning guy and we base everything off of that? Because I'm just wondering, let's say they've used Strom in the sixth inning, and then the eighth inning rolls around. And yeah. Here comes Ohtani.
Yeah.
It's a one-run game.
I think they will be willing to use him for more than just the ninth inning. I don't think there's any question. I think they realize why they got him, and they got him for this reason.
Right.
You know, you look at the difference between – I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if you go back and you look at the difference between the starters the last 2 years in the postseason and the relievers the last 2 years in the postseason, it is glaring. It is a huge difference in the effectiveness of those two units. So I do think Rob will be plenty willing to go to Duran in a spot in, you know, I mean, is he going to be in the sixth? No, I don't think so. But I do think that the eighth inning is absolutely fair game for Duran if the situation is right and they've got the extra off day. There's only one spot where you might have to pitch 2 days in a row. So that's helpful to that end. You can still run him out there for two innings, know he's going to get a day off and you know, be able to come back out there for another inning, you know, day after next or whatever. So I think they will be pretty aggressive with him.
Well, I think they should be. I mean, Hugh, they traded for this guy. He's been really good since he got here. And if he can go more than one inning, that changes the calculus on the whole game.
It's all hands on deck. That's how I look at it, and I think that's how this team is going to approach it. You know, when we talk about pitching, it's going to be probably – you don't have the luxury of waiting around and let somebody work their way out of anything.
Right, yeah, of course.
This is an all-hands-on-deck situation, and like Scott said, this is the best team that you're facing all year long, so you got to pull out all the stops to get past this to get to the next one.
Yeah, because it's such a short series, it can turn on you quickly. And, you know, we talk about how the Phillies have been pretty consistent all year. That's great. That works a little bit better in a 7-game series than it does in a 5-game series. So if you get that opportunity tomorrow to lock down a game and it requires you to go to Duran in the eighth inning, so be it. Go to Duran in the eighth inning, and I think they'll do that.
Scott, how do we think the lineup might look? I mean, they have some options. It's certainly deeper. You know, I was saying earlier, last year heading into the postseason, Castellanos was their cleanup hitter. Obviously, his role has changed, and he's probably not going to start most of the games this series. It just shows how much they've changed and evolved. Alec Bohm came back. He hit well the last couple weeks. We've seen that before in October. He hasn't played his best in October. Maybe this one will be different. There's also the Harrison Bader thing. I remember when they first got him, we talked to you about it, and you talked about you could see him hitting anywhere, 4, 5, 6, 7, and it's kind of floated that way. How do you think that beyond Bryce in the lineup will look, and are we looking at Bohm in that cleanup spot?
I think Bohm probably takes the cleanup spot. And again, I know there's some debate about, you know, I heard you guys talking on my drive down here talking about, you know, whether you really want Schwarber and Harper back-to-back. Well, it is something they've done all year. I tend to think they'll stay with it, and they'll go Trey, Kyle, Bryce, and Alec. And one of the reasons for Alec there, A, he's, you know, swinging the bat well. But B, he's not a guy who strikes out a ton. And I think they value that in that spot, in the cleanup spot. The fact that if you get runners on base, you know, Alec's not going to go up there. He's not a 50 home run guy, so he's not going to go up there looking to necessarily hit a home run. He's trying to use the middle of the field, put the ball in play, hit it hard somewhere. And I think that for their money, that, you know, given the other options, I think that's probably the way it goes. And then I think anytime a right-hander's out there, so Saturday, you know, with Ohtani, it'll be Brandon Marsh. And then I think you play with, you know, maybe Bader, 6, JT somewhere in there, 7, Bryson Stott, 8, and
Kepler.
Kepler, yeah. I mean, maybe Kepler hits 7th behind Bader, and then you go JT 8 and Stott 9 to keep mixing and matching the lefties. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that when you said that, that makes you feel how much deeper things are than maybe a year ago or 2 years ago.
Sure.
JT 8 and Stott, I feel like might be the most underrated thing the last 2 months. He's really hit since the end of July. He's become the player I think we wanted him to be, thought maybe he could be, and then I don't know what happened for that two-year span. He just wasn't that guy. But the guy he's been the last 2 months, that's an impactful nine-hitter.
Well, I'll give him some credit for making some changes. I mean, they brought him some ideas that they thought could help him. And changing his setup pre-pitch, moving his hands down, quieting things down. And then they've got him a little more on top of the plate. You know, so many people were pitching him away, and he's popping all those balls out to left field. Well, now they're not as far away because he's right on top of the plate, and he's turning on balls. And, I think he could be a really big bat. I think he and Marsh have the potential to be huge for the Phillies. You know, especially in those games, Ohtani, Yamamoto, if Glasnow's in the game, guys like that. They could be huge for the Phillies.
How much stock do you put into Phillies 4, Dodgers 2, the 6 times they played this year? Because, I mean, one of those series was a few weeks ago, so that's fresh in our mind. But I was looking back this morning at that first series. I mean, these rosters are so much different. Sasaki started one of the games. He's now maybe their closer. I think Jordan Romano closed the first win over the Dodgers this season. I mean, he's obviously nowhere to be found at this point. I mean, they are the same core of the teams, clearly, but April feels like a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. It was a long time ago. I think, you know, they were talking about it the other night when Yamamoto was pitching, and they brought up that game where he took the no-hitter in Baltimore.
Yes, in
two
early
outs
September.
In the ninth inning, and Gunnar Henderson hit a home run off him, broke up the shutout. Dodgers end up losing that game. Unbelievably so. And from there to the end of the season, they went 15-5. They lost 2 out of 3 in that stretch to the Phillies. Phillies played them really well. They did so by winning the first game, clinching the division, still coming back to win another game in that series. So I do think, you know, the Phillies, another number that I'll throw at you for the Phillies is that they have more wins this year when scoring 3 runs or less than anybody in baseball. And they had by far, believe it or not, the other club was Pittsburgh. I think they finished with 25 wins, maybe 26 with the one, I think the last one.
That's a lot with not many runs.
It's a lot. Yeah. And their winning percentage was far and away the best in baseball when scoring 3 runs or less. They know how to win close, low-scoring games. Will they be in close, low-scoring games? I bet they'll have some along the way. And those are the games that can be decided by getting a runner home from third in the third inning, right? And just that one extra run, and all of a sudden later in the game, you're like, wow, that was a big run. And I think they have shown the ability to be able to do that. They're definitely different. Both of them are different teams than they were. They're playing differently. They have different guys that are hot and different guys that are not, you know, based in terms of the April series. But I do look at the one on the road at Dodger Stadium, and the Phillies played some of their best baseball of the year, quite
they
frankly.
They did. 215-592-9494 to join the show. Our broadcasting from Stateside Live for 94 WIP's Red October Rally. Devin Caney's going to join us and be part of the show as well. Topper's going to talk at 1:15. We will carry that. Come on out and join us for the Red October Rally. John Middleton will be here live at 3 p.m. today with the afternoon show. When we get back, let's talk about a guy whose name didn't really come up much there, but he could have a role, potentially a big one in this series. All coming up. Scott Fransky with us on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Let's take a look at the Pro Football Injury Report presented by Fanatics Sportsbook. For Denver, we got Marvin Mims Jr. He's questionable with a hip. We also have questionable Nate Atkins, questionable with a concussion. And for Philadelphia, we have Grant Cockatera. Matter of fact, we got both of the tight ends. Grant Cockatera is sick right now. And Dallas Goedert is dealing with a knee injury. This football season, where else would you want to be other than with my friends at Fanatics Sportsbook? Fanatics Sportsbook is the home for fair play, protecting all pro football player prop bets across straights, parlays, and SGPs all season long for any first-half injury. They were the first to protect your prop bets throughout the first quarter, and now they've extended that protection throughout the whole first half. That's 30 minutes of player prop protection on all bets, whether it's quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, or even defensive players. Fanatics Sportsbook Fair Play Policy gives you the edge when it comes to cooking up a parlay. Why stick with a book that leaves you empty-handed when you can bet on one that has your back the whole first half? If you want to protect your parlays from injuries, switch to the sportsbook that will always have your back across the first and the second quarter for all pro football player games, every single game, all season long. Fanatics Sportsbook, winning hits different here. That's today's report. Listen all season long for weekly injury updates. Presented by Fanatics Sportsbook, the home of fair play. Download the app today. Must be 21 plus. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.